All right, good afternoon. Let's call the meeting of the House Military Veterans Affairs Committee to order. It is now 1:02 p.m., Tuesday, March 7th, in the State Capitol Gruenberg Room 120. Present, we have Representative Parrish, Representative Sponholz, Representative Rauscher, and myself, Representative Chris Tuck. And let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. And just a little bit of housekeeping, make sure your phones are all the way down on silent, pass vibrate if you can. And I want to thank Caitlin Ellis for doing our house records. And we have Ms. Goodell in the back taking care of us for moderating the meeting. And then also Kendra Closter here as my committee aide. Today we have one bill on the calendar, House Bill 150. It's the pay allowances and benefits for organized militia members. This is an ongoing effort to for the Alaska State Legislature and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to modernize the 1955 Alaska Military Code by providing statutory changes that would better serve our Alaska organized militia. And House Bill 150 would authorize the same pay, allowances, and benefits for the organized militia, whether they are called into state active duty by the governor or adjutant general, or called to service under federal active duty by the president. And so at this time, I'd like to welcome Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole to the table, and also want to recognize and welcome Colonel John James, who's with the Alaska State Defense Force, and with him Major Alan Arlerkar, who's also with the Alaska State Defense Fund. Okay, would you like to take it away?
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to present on House Bill 150 today, which we support. Just walking you through the bill briefly, Section 1 clarifies that for when a member of the organized militia, which would be the Air National Guard, the Army National Guard, the Alaska State Defense Force, or the Alaska Naval Militia, is in state active duty, that is paid by the state, their pay would mirror that they would get if they were put in status by the federal government. Today we have a more confusing situation in terms of what happens. In fact, we have two different situations. For those who are in the Alaska Naval Militia, the Air National Guard, or the Army National Guard, they're on one pay system, which has some challenges, and the Alaska State Defense Force is on another. For the Alaska, for the first three, the Air National Guard, Army National Guard, and Alaska Naval Militia, we have to look back to when the original act was enacted, take a consumer price index on an annual basis and amortize that up to what the current value is today to set the base value, and compare that with 200% of the basic pay for an individual at a given rank to go forward to determine what their pay should be for a given day. That's the easy one, and ultimately you can take one or two charts like this to figure the pay. The creative part turns when you get to the Alaska State Defense Force. When the Alaska State Defense Force is placed into active duty, you look at the duties they're doing on a given day. Based on those duties on that given day, you figure out what in the state official position description system, which is a huge database of thousands of pages, maintained by Department of Administration, most closely correlates with that to determine the range they should be at in the state pay system for what they're doing. And that can vary from day to day based on what their duties are in a disaster, if they're answering phones, or if they're doing field work assisting with assessments, or if they're doing warehouse work. The same individual on three different days can be in three different OPD, official position description job categories at three different ranges. And to further compound that, some of those positions are salaried positions, overtime exempt, others are not. So one day we may need an employee out doing something such as on a wildland fire, where after 7.5 hours we'd have to start paying overtime pay. The next day he could be in a different position, such as an administrative officer or supervisor position, where he would be salaried. There would not be overtime pay. The third day he could be in something totally different. The long and short of it is the administrative overhead is excessive for state active duty in terms of taking these different pay systems, and it's frankly difficult to get it right without errors that frequently requiring that we go back and do subsequent corrective actions. just because of the different systems and permutations out there. If we could take one employee, employment one status, doing one thing for an extended period, it would be easy. But that's not what happens in a disaster. In a disaster, the duties shift frequently fluidly based on what has to be done, which is why we support this bill and the simplification it has here. We think it's difficult to estimate there was an indeterminate fiscal note on this bill. It's difficult to tell you who exactly we will need for a given disaster in a given year when we don't know what the disaster is, so we don't know what the need is for people. We did, however, look back at the Sockeye fire for a benchmark as the most recent data we could find. In that case, over the equivalent of about 179 person days that were expended during that, the difference in price of the new scheme over the status quo was about $3,000 more over 179 person days of work of 7.5 to 8 hours a day. In short, it's negligible, and that could go up or down depending on the type of people you needed for a given disaster that we're hesitant to say that's the benchmark.
Yes, Representative Reynolds.
Thank you. Through the chair, you said that the new scheme applied to the Sockeye fire would be an increase in $3,000 in dollars. Is that specifically in compensation? Does that also take into account the reduced administrative oversight or management that would need to take place in the current scheme? Sorry.
Through the chair, Representative Spanholtz, that is just looking at the payment to those working the disaster, the frontline folks. We believe there would be a savings in administrative time. I'm confident there would be a savings. I hesitate to say it would be $3,000 worth, but we believe it would be substantial in reducing the staff burden in doing that. That staff time and burden is charged to the disaster, and the disaster relief funds that go in as additional overhead costs that we would be able to reduce in subsequent disasters by going to the new scheme. So the short version of that $3,000 is just what is paid out immediately to the responders for that event.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner Dole, can you put an approximate value on the reduced administrative burden?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I know Administrative Services Director Duffy is on the line. I'd like him to take that question under advisement, run a couple scenarios, and we will supplement within 24 hours in terms of what it entails to his staff and the different processes. I could give you a hip shot here, but I think a thoughtful response we can get to you in 24 hours.
That sounds good. Thank you both.
I think we do have Brian Duffy online.
Mr. Chair, he is online. I don't believe.
And will do. Thank you.
Okay.
He texted me before I turned my phone off. Here, so I thought he was, Mr. Chair. Looking at the other sections of the bill, the big changes are we treat all the organized militia as one entity for one compensation system in Section 2. We also, in Section 2, continue to maintain where there's eligibility for travel allowances to do that under the state system, not the federal, which probably 19 out of 20 times the federal system would be more expensive for compensation for travel costs that are that we would have to reimburse. The other sections just clarifying issues. Section 3 for our workers' compensation purposes, clarifying the base rate for doing the calculations. And Section 4 clarifying that really there's no change to that, but for members of the Alaska Naval Militia, Air National Guard, and Army National Guard, they will continue to accrue benefits paid into the Alaska National Guard Naval Militia Retirement System for state active duty as they do now. That is a overview of the bill, and I'm ready for your questions, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, through the chair. Nice to see you again. Appreciate you being here. Just so I can get a little clarification on what agencies or what what branches of the military this actually covers. Who all is covered here?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, who is covered under this bill are those uniformed services under the State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. That is the two gentlemen in the Alaska State Defense Force sitting behind me and the 80 or so other volunteers we have with them who are doing preparing untrained for such events, as well as the Air National Guard and the Army National Guard, but only when called in the state active service. So if you think of the fire by Sutton last fall, they did immediate response in a federal capacity. We're paid by the feds. We paid nothing. If that fire had continued, they would have continued being paid as the state equivalent to wildland firefighters under the DNR pay scheme. In a case like that, or the Army National Guard in past years in wildland firefighting with the helicopters has done some days. But this does not cover any other part of the state government, and it does not cover federal military assistance or even the Air and Army National Guard when they're doing it with federal resources, federal pay, under immediate response authority in the first 24 hours.
Yep. Thank you. Through the chair. The Alaska State Defense Force consists of the Air National Guard and the Army National Guard. Is that what we're saying here?
Through the chair, the organized militia consists of the Air National Guard, the Army National Guard, the Alaska State Defense Force, and the Alaska Naval Militia. The Air and Army National Guards and the Alaska Naval Militia have dual federal and state training and readiness requirements. The Alaska State Defense Force is part of the organized militia, but is a state-only entity that's separate from the other three.
Through the chair, are there any other, who all else pays to their wages under these circumstances, just the state?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, there's different scenarios. In the case of immediate response by the Air or the Army National Guard, while in that first 24 hours, the federal government will pay for their wages if it's training or other duties they convert to cover it. If it is a state-only disaster, only the state will pay for their wages. If it becomes declared a national disaster, at that point through FEMA, as part of the disaster reimbursement, the federal government will pay a portion of the usually 75% of their wages.
Follow-up permission?
Yeah, just real quick. If the record reflect, I apologize to my vice chair, Gabrielle Ledoux, and Representative Reinbold. They've been here shortly after we started, so I just wanted to record reflect that. Yes, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you again. I guess I should rephrase my question. Okay. In a state emergency, do they get other pay besides the state?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, generally no, and I'm sorry to keep doing these things. There are some employers who on their own opt to continue paying members serving in the militia while responding to a state emergency. They will continue to pay them their benefits and pay. However, there is no
government
statutory requirement to do so, and there's no other government benefits paid.
Okay, I guess that's what I really was trying to get at. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Any other questions for yes, Representative Reinbold?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So basically, I think you guys know I'm a big supporter, big fan of the State Defense Force. But there's a fiscal reality that we're facing, as you well know. And I looked at the fiscal note, and it's an indeterminate fiscal note. And I've got two questions, and I'll ask them however the chairman wants me to. But my first one is based on a 10-year look back. What do you anticipate the fiscal note to be? I know this is a tough question, but when we vote on things, we just went up $127 million in a $3 to $4 billion deficit. So we're asking Alaskans to cover the bill, and I'm very concerned. So I just, not that this isn't super important, but that's my first question. And so through the chair, that's question number one.
through the chair, Representative Reinbolt. If I look back 10 years, if I look at the differential we have based on the sockeye fire of $3,000 over about 179 days, it costs $3,000 more over the new system. However, the substantial reduction in administrative burden and preparation time, well, honestly, I believe it's fiscally, if I look at those 10 years, I believe it would come out fiscally neutral. I cannot tell you in the future, though, what the distribution of individuals needed for disasters will be. But I believe we're within 2% of the base that we look at today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my second question is, that's good to know, and I think I heard that as I was coming in, but I just wanted to make sure that people are anticipating us asking these tough questions right now. And the second question would be, you have a lot of priorities in your program, in your department. How much of a priority is this for you? I was a huge believer in that new program, that rural outreach, and this one. But I think that all departments need to be prioritizing what's their constitutional obligation, their statutory, but even more than that, what benefits the people of Alaska the most. So how would this bill lay into your priorities as deputy commissioner?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbolt, this bill is important going forward for two things. It is a cost containment on the administrative cost over in addressing disasters in terms of the it allows more of the money that comes out of the disaster relief fund to go to responders or reconstruction efforts rather than to administrative staff trying to figure out the 18 different calculations to get somebody's pay right. The other reason it's important is for the consistency and the quicker pay, it is conducive for these volunteers to come forward and agree to serve Alaskans in time of disaster. With there being uncertainty about how much they're going to get paid on a given day and when they're going to get paid, that we have some great Alaskans behind me to my left who will step forward and do things, but they got to pay the rent and, you know, put bread on the table, too. Mm-hmm. We believe this increases our ability to provide emergency response capability at no cost.
Follow-up, Representative Reinbold?
I just want to say thank you. I love this defense force, and I have a lot of people in my district that really want me to support this effort. So I'm happy that it's going to be cost-neutral, but I mean, as you know, I've done many times in the past, I really want the departments to prioritize, but this one is probably the most cost-effective, and I still hope that rural outreach goes forth, because we just don't know what's going to happen in the future, and I think being prepared and ready is far more cost-effective than reacting. So anyway, just want to say thank you for being here and bringing this to our attention.
Okay, and Representative Ledoux.
Thank you. I understand your second reason. I mean, the importance, obviously, to the militia, to the defense forces, of knowing what their pay is going to be and having it quickly and so forth. As far as the cost containment, though, I'm not sure that I necessarily follow that. So if it's going to reduce costs on an administrative level, do you foresee that it's going to take less staff, that the number of administrative personnel that you have is going to be lessened? Because if it doesn't lessen the number of staff, I'm not sure that I follow you as to how it is a cost containment measure. That doesn't mean that I can't necessarily support the bill. I'm just not following the reasoning there.
Through the chair, Vice Chair Ledoux, my apologies for being vague and ambiguous, not clearing. I had a bunch of underlying assumptions I should probably address more clearly. My apologies. Looking at disaster and how we pay for disaster cost in Alaska, they largely, once something happens, they are paid through the Disaster Relief Fund. The Disaster Relief Fund is funded by a capital appropriation when it needs to be refilled. administrative time that would go into that surge effort to process the pay for these first responders would also be charged back to that disaster. So the savings is going to be in the draw on that capital budget, not the day-in, day-out operating budget, but rather the DRF, the Disaster Relief Fund, which is capital budget funded for addressing those surge events. So I believe the savings longer term will occur on the disaster relief fund burden.
So just follow up. So is the pay for the employees as well as for the folks who administer it, is that all from the disaster relief fund?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, for state active duty, generally, if it's a state disaster, it's from the disaster relief fund. If it's a federal disaster, it's 75-25 state or federal to state. But generally, for those disasters, the responder pay will come out of reimbursements through the disaster relief fund or other non-budget items. The second item, in terms of the administrative overhead, is also charged to the disaster for preparing those documents.
So during the disaster, do you hire additional personnel? I understand you might have additional personnel with respect to the folks who are actually fighting the disaster, but do you have additional personnel with respect to the people who are dealing with the paychecks?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, there's for certain roles, Alaska State Defense Force or the Air Guard or Army Guard may bring finance clerks on board. We may otherwise use current staff and have to pay them overtime. And then we have some folks like ASD Duffy who are salaried employees, so we just work them like a rented mule.
But you
and that's not charging.
But there are chargeable folks who are eligible for overtime that you would think, if this goes into effect, that there'd be less overtime involved. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Ledoux, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the other side of the equation, for the members of the militia who are actively serving and their commanding officers, is there going to be a lower paperwork burden for them if this goes through?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I believe that paperwork would be reduced, particularly for Alaska State Defense Force members, because we don't have to track the amount of time doing a given type of activity and the wages and just the that 7.5 hours. Is it overtime exempt? Is it not? Are they serving as something that should be a range 12, or are they serving as something that should be a range 14? That administrative burden would be reduced on the individual. I think the most exciting thing about this is we can pay them faster. Personal bias there, because they're taking away from their civilian job. Mm-hmm. For instance, Major Alucard here today is taking away time from his civilian employer to provide some information to some later on ASDF. So when they're taking away from their civilian employer and their pay, I think it's important we can pay them promptly, and this considerably will enhance our ability.
And
hello, Mr. Parrish.
Again, this might be a question for Mr. Duffy, but when you say that we'll be able to pay them more promptly, is there an approximate time horizon for the current system and for the new one?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, if I'm hoping Mr. Duffy can be unmuted and can answer whether he can do that now or he can get back to you in the next day on that.
So through the chair, for the record, my name is Brian Duffy, the Admin Services Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Representative Parrish, to address your question and the other members' questions, I'd refer back to a calculation sheet that we had provided, I believe, to the chairman's office that outlines the costs associated with the 2015 Sockeye fire response in both the old and new construct. And the delta is actually, for those 14 people that assisted in that effort, the delta is only $364.40, an average of about $26 a person, to have a much more simplified and cleaner pay structure than the current structure that's cumbersome. We will use that example to develop the estimates associated with the reduction in administrative time to calculate that pay. Over.
And then if I may interject just real quick, is the total that we see on the old and the new, the old being $30,681.93 versus the new, which would be $31,046.33. So it's actually less than $1,000 difference. I think on record earlier we said $3,000, but I think it actually was less than that.
To the chair, or Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner, that's correct. I misspoke. So
it's actually very, very small in comparison to how clean things would operate having a single system.
And through the chair, Representative Parrish, we'll get back to you on processing time versus processing time.
Representative Rofscher.
Yes, two questions. First one for the chair. In other committees that I've been sitting in, if there is one stop before the floor, they tend to want to hold it a week or, you know, to another meeting. What's the intention of this bill today, since it has two other stops to make?
My intent today on this bill is to go ahead and have public testimony and then hold it over in case somebody has any amendments or any different ideas or any other questions, and then take it up at the next committee meeting.
Thank you. And follow-up question, not for you, but directed back toward Mr. Dole. This is just a question. I'm just going to ask this because it's been bothering me. When did the organized militia get the name organized militia? I always associated it with people like myself and other people who were organized and became a militia. So I guess when did the military entities become an organized militia? When did they get that name? I just don't know.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, the differentiation between the unorganized militia and the organized militia in Alaska occurred shortly after statehood in the 1950s when Title 26 was first promulgated. All able-bodied Alaskans are part of the unorganized militia, any of those who will step forward and do right by our nation and state. The organized militia was specifically then identified to be that other group, because they already wear a uniform and fall into military formations. That's why they get the organized versus unorganized. It's not a personal affront intended to anyone who is yet to be affiliated.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much.
Representative Sponholz.
I think I have more of a comment than a question. I just ran the math on the difference the difference between the new system and the old system on the spreadsheet that you provided us, and it's actually a difference of $364.40, which I imagine is very likely that we would save at least that much for that one particular incident. We're talking about the Sockeye fire, just in terms of the paperwork time saved, both on the part of personnel, documenting their transition and activities from one activity to the next, but also in terms of administration. I would find it hard to imagine that actually it wouldn't be revenue positive over the long run, given the simplicity of the new system. So I just want to add that to the record.
Representative Sponholz, intuitively, we strongly agree with you, but because we cannot forecast the exact type of individuals needed in the future and where they would come in the relative systems, that's why we went indeterminate rather than at the zero fiscal note or fiscally positive.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense on your part, just given the specific example that you gave us. I think it's important to note the scale of the difference is pretty negligible in terms of an increase in costs, and that there will be a commensurate reduction in terms of administrative burden and paperwork burden. Thank you.
Representative Parrish. Well, maybe let the record reflect that Representative Sather joined us about 1:25. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, in looking over the payment schedule for the Sockeye fire, or the review of payment for the Sockeye fire, some people get paid more, some people get paid considerably less. Is it the general is support within the militia for this bill high uniformly, or prevailingly at least.
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, we came forward with this bill because of concerns voiced in the militia for predictability and quicker pay.
Cool. Thank you.
Any further comments, discussions, questions? All righty. I would like to go ahead and open it up to public testimony. We are now taking public testimony in House Bill 150. Is there anyone online that would like to further testify? Brian Duffy, would you like to add any comments?
Through the chair, Brian Duffy, no additional comments from the ASG office at the MBA. Over.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Anyone in the committee room that would like to testify? Would you like to join us? Sure. And please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Sure. For the record, I'm Colonel John James, last State Defense Force Commander. Greatly appreciate any consideration, and thanks very much. If I could answer any questions, I'd like to provide you the opportunity to do so.
Any questions?
Oh.
Yep, Representative Parrish.
Just what I asked you a few moments ago, the support for this is high within the State Defense Force.
Absolutely all caps, Representative. I'll through the chair, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Absolutely all caps, Representative.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Are there any other comments, questions? Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Is there any other public members that would like to testify? All right, seeing no others here to testify, we're going to close public testimony. Okay, so this is just another Title 26 changes that is necessary to allow the department to be able to run efficiently, smoothly. Just some more cleanup language that we're going to try to help the department do their service to the state of Alaska at the best that they can. So we're going to hold this bill right now. Our next hearing will be on Thursday, March 9th. At that time, we'll have the Alaska Veterans Advisory Council presenting to the committee, and then we'll take up House Bill 150 one more time. Any other questions or comments? All right. Thank you so much. We will stand adjourned at 1:34 p.m.